Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity, the highway to north, this is Safety Wars for Tuesday, May 13, 2025. My apologies to whoever was broadcasting on Safety FM. Got to the microphone a little bit late tonight. Technical issues. Always technical issues. Today, I mean, how many times have you had a surge protector blowout? Well, it happened to me tonight. How's that? Yes, I am still on the road broadcasting. Back up with the real studio computer. We had an issue last week. Every week there's an issue. So how's everybody doing out there? I'm glad to see everybody is there. Nothing big happened the last couple of days. It's actually really refreshing out there. I appreciate all the support and love that you're sending my way. We're going to, you know, a lot of project work out there. We're working like 10, 12-hour days. Here yesterday, I got to work, and I was to one of the projects I'm on. I was like, you know, I'm going to go in the car. I'm going to take a nap off-site, you know. Just one of those things. And by the way, I won't send you a bill. Just very, very sick. And Tyler, we had a huge weekend this weekend. 4 baseball games. So my son James was the one of the bat boys on Saturday for Rockland Boulders in beautiful Pomona, New York. Opening day, Thursday was opening day. Both my kids were going to be there, but got rained out. So now we are, we had it on Saturday, doubleheader. Started at 7 because St. Thomas Aquinas College or University, I don't know which one, they rented out the stadium for graduation. So, I pull up and you can imagine this and I'm like, wow, a lot of it's got to be sold out for opening day. That's good. You go there and they're all there for the college graduation. Like, then we had a good time though. Boulders lost both games. We had a good time. That's the important thing, right? Have fun. You're not spending we're not spending a mint at a minor league stadium because, I get free tickets. My son is there and, you know, you might find the law, got to hang out, enjoy the ball game. Anyway, that's a lot. No, even though nothing bad, I have a lot of news going on out there. So being that we came on late, I am probably going to be moving into hour 2 here. Where we talk about political discussion, where hour 1 is normally safety, then we talk about politics. Hour 2, and for that we go on to Rumble for that, and also we release that as a podcast. Reason being is, and this happened to a couple of friends of the program, where they had posted stuff 10 years ago on politics, and someone gets them for terms of service violation, they end up losing their platform. And it was rather innocuous, right? And then try to get back on after that. Anyway, well, let's go right into news here. And what else we got? Okay. Go right into the news. Let's do a share screen here. And Department of Labor issued, they're getting better on the press releases. They're not like when the other guy was in, but they are getting there. All right, so here we have Department of Labor files suit alleging U.S. Postal Service wrongfully fired a Texas worker for reporting work-related injuries. This has been going on and on and on and on for a couple of months. Or it's got to be like 6 months now. U.S. Postal Service, come on. They're reporting work-related injuries, and you're really doing that? I mean, you are the quasi-federal agency there, right? The U.S. Department of Labor has filed a suit against the U.S. Postal Service for wrongful termination of an employee who fell while delivering mail and reported the work-related injury. An investigation by the department's Occupational Safety and Health Administration found the USPS violated the whistleblower provisions of the Occupational Safety and Health Act by firing the worker on February 27, 2024, 10 days after the injury was reported. So, now, sometimes they like to pull a fast one here, these agencies. Well, Jim, what do you mean they like to pull a fast one? Well, they think nobody's paying attention here, right? And we wonder why we have human resource. No. So, for example, when I get hired as a direct hire on these projects, there's a rather extensive human resources process we have to go through. Sort of like I had a conversation with somebody that said, Jim, how do you like all that onboarding stuff? And I said, well, it's like this. Have you ever watched Seinfeld? And the guy's like, oh, yeah, we like it. I said, and now there's a couple of episodes where George Costanza does some really bad stuff. And he's like, was that really wrong for me to do that? Really? I didn't know that. And that's sort of like how this is. Here, right? Oh, I was wrong to fire somebody for getting injured on the work on the job and report. It's wrong, really. This is why you and the conversation went this way with us, where well, you have people out there that don't know right from wrong. And in this case, this is a violation of federal law and a regulation. Good chance the manager, unless they've had unless they have had some kind of training that they know this. Again, you know, you can't go around that and doing that. The other thing is this, with this. You have a certain time frame to get that reported. You get it in as soon as possible. I would even argue that even if you're a little bit unsure, one way or the other, report it. Just so you don't miss the time frame with it. The department suit filed by the U.S. District Court of Western District of Texas asked the court to uphold the USPS liable for illegal retaliation and require payment of back wages and taxes. OSHA's Whistleblower Protection Program enforces the Whistleblower Provisions 25 Whistleblower Statutes protecting employees from retaliation for reporting violations of workplace, airline, anti-money laundering, and a whole bunch of other crap. I mean, you know, it's a big deal. Here we have the next one. U.S. Department of Labor finds child labor safety violations at a Meadville manufacturing facility. And we're going to go up. They released the accident report on this. A lot of times you get this stuff, they haven't released it. The other administration used to issue the accident investigation with every one of these. So pretty interesting reads, but now we kind of work a little harder to find that info. A company paid, and again, we not our policy to name companies here, multiple U.S. Department of Labor investigations into minor age workers' fingertip amputation in May 2024 found a Meadville manufacturing company violated federal law and exposed employees to a half a dozen serious workplace safety violations. the Department's Wage and Hour Division and OSHA investigated the metal components manufacturer and determined a 16-year-old suffered thumb tip amputation while operating a metal forming machine. Child labor laws are established to protect minors from workplace dangers. Employers have a legal responsibility to ensure the safety and well-being of young workers. So Wage and Hour Division Assistant Director Catherine Glencoe in Charleston, West Virginia. So, hold on one second here. So minors, that's younger than 18, are restricted from certain activities. Well, what do you mean, Jim? They're restricted from certain activities. A lot of things that they're not allowed to do are. Now, the common one is, well, they're not allowed to use meat slicers. Okay, but in a lot of states, not allowed to do construction younger than 18. Not allowed to work from height younger than 18. A machine like this in a lot of places, not allowed to operate on that, right? The company has paid the department $50,100. $92 in civil money penalties for his violations of child labor regulations, and $14,700 in a settlement with OSHA to resolve the 6 series and 1 other than series violation. So here, let's click on this, child labor regulations. And, okay, the hazardous occupation, FL, Fair Labor Standards Act. And by the way, I think it should be a bill was just passed in Congress that a lot of tax cuts in the lower House of Representatives, I think it's time to update the Fair Labor Standards Act. You know, if that law goes through, what they're saying. Because I tell you what, there's going to be a lot of salaried workers that are going to be pissed off here. The FLSA established an 18-year minimum wage for those non-agricultural occupations that the Secretary of Labor finds and declares to be particularly hazardous for 16 and 17-year-old minors, detrimental to their health and well-being. Number one, manufacturing explosives. Two, driving a motor vehicle or work as an outside helper on motor vehicles. Right? Coal mining. Occupations in forest fighting, forest fire prevention, timber track forestry service, and occupations in logging and sawmilling operations, power-driven woodworking machines. Exposure to radioactive substances, power-driven hoisting operations. Number eight, so this is where they got them for that 50 Gs, right? Power-driven metal-forming punching or shearing machines, mining, power-driven meat processing machines, and meat packing plants. That's one that everybody talks about, but there's a lot more. Power-driven bakery machines, balers, compactors, power-driven paper products machines, manufacture brick, tile, or related products, power-driven circular saws, bandsaws, guillotine shears, chainsaws, reciprocating saws, wood chippers, and abrasive cutting discs. A lot of these are used in construction. Wrecking, demolition, and shipbreaking operations. Roofing operations and work performed on or about a roof. Trenching excavation operations, right? We're now no working in a trench more than 4 feet deep. All those go into that. I mean, they got them on the one with the shears. So let's see here. I have the citation violations here. One appears to be still open, according to the website. Following inspection, that has not been indicated as closed. So here we have 1910. Right, the current penalty is $3,700. Points of operation machinery were not guarded to prevent employee from having any part of their body in the danger zone during operating cycles. All right. Okay, no guards. Okay, let's go for the second one here. So according to the press release, they settled all of these for $14,700 here. So let's see what they were. Again, 1910 to 12. One or more methods of machine guarding, not provided. All right. Next one, 1910-178, forklifts. Right? No forklift stuff going on there, training or anything else like that. 1910-219-B01, a flywheel with parts 7 feet or less above the floor or platform were not guarded. 1910-147, this is lockout tagout. The employer did not conduct an annual or more frequent inspection of energy control procedures to ensure that the procedure and requirements of this standard were followed. 1910-303, listed or labeled electrical equipment was not used or installed in accordance with instructions included in the listing and labeling. 1005 here, 1910-303, again, listed or labeled electrical equipment when it's not used or installed in accordance with instructions included in the listing. And the same one. And powered industrial trucks were found to be needed in repair or defective. All right, in this case, a seat cushion. All right. So let's go to our first commercial break here.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Posel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
So some news from last week. EPA regional administrator meets with business leaders and water officials and legal community in New Jersey. Yesterday, US EPA agency Region 2 Administrator Michael Martucci engaged with New Jersey's business, utility, and legal communities to discuss the agency's environmental priorities and strengthen partnerships across state advancing EPA goals of permitting reform cooperative federalism. That means that federalism is that you let the local localities deal with things. And cross-agency collaboration delivers smarter, faster, and more effective environmental protection. We're focused on building bridges with business leaders, utilities, and legal experts because environmental progress happens faster and lasts longer when we work together, said EPA Regional Administrator Michael Martucci. The day began with a business roundtable hosted by the Commerce and Industry Association of New Jersey. The discussion focused on EPA's ongoing work in the state, safe drinking water regulations, and energy priorities. Regional Administrator Martucci spoke directly with business leaders about collaborating and the agency's commitment to supporting both economic development and environmental stewardship. Following the roundtable, Regional Administrator Mark Tucci toured the Carl J. Olson Water Treatment Plant in Edison, New Jersey. The plant is operated by Middlesex Water Company. And administrator viewed the plant's cutting-edge water treatment operations to discuss the company's response to PFAS, PFAs, and drinking water. Those are forever chemicals, right? Middlesex Water outlined its plans for a new treatment facility in Edison to address the current and future state of federal regulatory requirements. And they also met elsewhere in the New Jersey Bar Administration. And now, what's the PA region too? Is New Jersey, New York, and one of my favorite is Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, and 8 Indian nations. Spread out. I mean, you know, it's huge. Why is Puerto Rico and U.S. Virgin Islands not in the same place as Florida or the 8 Indian nations, wherever they're released? I couldn't tell you that. I mean, it's ridiculous. So thus ends the government website portion of this, so I can't share any of this. Well, I can, but I'll get into trouble here, right? Copyright stuff. Some of the other news out there. Wisconsin judge indicted on charges that she helped immigrant evade agents. The Wisconsin judge arrested last month and accused of helping an undocumented immigrant evade federal agents was indicted by the federal grand jury on Tuesday on charges of concealing a person from arrest and obstruction of proceedings. The indictment of the judge, Hannah C. Dugan, of Milwaukee County Circuit Court, was routine but a significant step in the Justice Department's case against her. The Trump administration has defended the prosecution as a warning. It goes on, you know, when he reads the alleged story here, I'm not going to go into the alleged story. It's pretty messed up that a judge would do stuff like this. So basically, the guy was there for something else. And, this just came across. Menendez Brothers resentenced. But anyway, was there on another unrelated case, right? And the ICE came to arrest him in court because this is like the safest way to do it. Because, you know, in court, you're probably going to have to go through a metal detector. You have the people in court that are already embedded, the sheriffs, depending on what jurisdiction you're in, but it's the sheriffs in a lot of court court officers. So what ended up, she allegedly let him go out a secret entrance / exit. And, you know, it was, helped him out. Several federal officials from different agencies had gathered in the hallway outside Judge Dugan's courtroom, allegedly, and had planned to arrest Mr. Flores Ruiz, who said he was in the country illegally after his court appearance. Federal agents had told courthouse security officer and the judge's courtroom deputy about their plans, according to an FBI charging document. So let's see what that is. Okay, I'm reading this. Again, this is just here. You're getting this organic. 6 members of the Milwaukee ICE ERA Task Force plan to take part in the arrest of Flores Ruiz on April 18th, and it names the agents. At approximately 8 a.m., the deportation officer A and CBP officer A arrived at the courthouse, presented identification to the security guard, and explained that they were present to make an arrest. Deportation officer A and CBP officer A were asked to show not only their credentials, but also their badges. Security guard stated that she needed to speak with a supervisor. Sergeant with Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office contacted and spoke to the deportation officer. Sergeant asked that any arrest wait until the completion of the scheduled hearing before the Judge Dugan, as this was standard practice. The federal officers agreed, and they were allowed to proceed unescorted into public hallway. The other members in the arrest team were already present in the Sixth Sport Club hallway when the federal agents arrived. It goes on and on, right? And the courtroom deputy had opened the doors to the courtroom at approximately 8:15 a.m., reported that individuals began checking in for the list of matters scheduled for that morning. The courtroom deputy had received a list of individuals appearing that day. The courtroom deputy checked the defendants while attorneys checked in with the clerk. Goes on and on. Arrest team members reported that while waiting outside the courtroom, a woman approached and took photos of arrest team members. DEA agent B, who was inconspicuously seated away from the group, was not photographed. The individual taking photographs of the agents has been identified by multiple witnesses as an attorney employed by the State of Wisconsin Public Defender's Office, Attorney A. And we're going on. Judge Eugen Luner learns of ICE's presence and confronts members of the arrest team. And here it goes. Blah, blah, blah. There were... witnesses uniformly reported that Judge Dugan was visibly upset and had confrontational, angry demeanor. Judge Dugan, and this is all alleged, by the way, addressed the deportation officer A and asked if deportation officer A was present for a court appearance. When the deportation officer A responded no, Judge Dugan stated that deportation A would need to leave the courthouse. Deportation officer A stated the deportation officer A was there to effectuate an arrest. Judge Dugan asked if the deportation A had a judicial warrant and deportation officer, no, I have an administrative warrant. Judge Dugan stated that needed a deportation warrant. A judge told Dugan that the deportation officer A, going on and on. The judge ordered them out of the courthouse. Judge A then escorted members of the arrest team away from the courtroom down the hall. And again, an agent was stayed behind in the courtroom, right? Remained by the courtroom, did not know who he was, right? Like an undercover dude. The courtroom deputies reported observing a portion, and it goes on and on. This is what the news doesn't go into, right? The mainstream news. I'm telling you to go and look this up. And, you know, it goes back and forth. Right. Judge Dugan escorts, allegedly, Flores was through a jury door to avoid arrest. Multiple witnesses have described their observations after Judge Dugan returned to her courtroom after directing members of the arrest team to the chief judge's office. Right. And again, allegedly shoot him out of a back door. I don't know, a little bit disconcerting that a judge would be accused of doing this. I'm sorry. Now, we should have said this at the beginning, but here we have Pete Rose, reinstated by MLB, and is eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame. Baseball's all-time hit leader, who died at 83 last September, has been banned since 89 after an investigation revealed he had placed bets while playing. Pete Rose has officially been taken off the MLB's permanent ineligible list. The league announced on Tuesday, baseball's all-time hits leader was banned in 1989 after an investigation revealed a longtime Cincinnati Red Star that placed bet. Now, I'm going to say this. All right. So last year, 2024, August, I had an opportunity to visit the Baseball Hall of Fame up in Cooperstown, New York, by someone's playing at the All-Star Village. Pretty nice facility, I'll say that much. Anyway, a really nice facility. But basically, all those tournaments are up there all summer. I think it's 8 weeks or 9 weeks or 7 weeks of tournaments there. And they have a beautiful facility there. And we missed her by a week. who's the boss, right? Alyssa Milano. She was there the week before. Anyway, her son was there. Anyway, we talked about her on this podcast because she got bad press for advertising for like chipping in to get her team there. But anyway, I digress. For her son's team, you know, cost like $37,000 last year, $38,000 to send a team there. Lots of fundraising, and she was fundraising, and they said, well, she should have just paid for the bill. No, she shouldn't have, right? But anyway, we go to Cooperstown. And they said, well, Pete Rose is not in Cooperstown. Well, Cooperstown is like three floors, and they have like the hall where they have everybody's names and plaques and everything else up there. He's not in that room with all of the plaques, but he is on display, and they did have a nice display, and I took a photo of it here. I don't have it available right now, but I did take a photo. There is a photo of him here it is. Oh. There is a photo of him, and let's see if I could share this. Here it is. In Cooperstown, there is a, here you go. There he is. That's him. I mean, that's his photo. He isn't in the Baseball Hall of Fame. However, he's not in that hall, right, of the Hall of Fame, right? And here we got some other photos here. But anyway, they had, here it is. So there's a whole room with plaques here, right? So here's Michael Piazza, one of my son's favorite all-time players here. And there they have, I don't know how many plaques, but Pete Rose is not in there. But to say he's not in the Hall of Fame is another one, because that's him. That's the display. I knew that photo would come in handy someday, right? So again, I don't like inaccurate information, and that's inaccurate. It's like, and he is in there. He's just not in the hallmark where there are plaques. With that, okay. Here we have assisted dying bill moves forward in New York. Dozens of advocates have spent years in the Capitol always pushing for terminal New Yorkers to legally end their own lives. Physicians' aid are finally seeing hope. The Assembly having passed Medicaid Aid in Dying Act last, but all eyes are on the Senate, where Democrat support for the measure has continued to grow over the last few years. Now, I'm going to say this, and this is going to be a little controversial here. I get it. I don't shy away from controversy. Other countries, they have this, Northern Europe, and people are compelled and talked into ending their own life. So is it really their decision? One of the things that we talk about here on the show is, are we making our own decisions, or are we being compelled to make our own decisions? I don't care if it's workplace safety, environmental protection, or situations like this, end of life issues. Are you being compelled, or any other number of issues out there? We are being data mined out here. People, that right? When with all these free services out here, right? We have free internet, YouTube, Facebook, all the other social media, news websites, we're being tracked. And what we are clicking on, we get advertisements for. It's even gotten more effed up where I was on a phone call, and this wasn't last year or last week. This is like 10 years ago. I'm on the phone with somebody, and they're happy that they got for their birthday a metal detector. Right? I know, 1970s and 80s era hobby. But they always wanted a metal detector, and their spouse went out and got a metal detector. So going around in the backyard, they found a couple of coins. I think they found an earring that somebody lost, right? And, you know, stuff like that. Well, what do you think? I go on Amazon about an hour later, I see all these advertisements about metal detectors. Really? My wife, somehow, her computer, many years ago when we first got married, she bought a new computer, I bought a new computer, and I think it was even before we got married. Somehow, our computers got linked, and our accounts got linked on everything. So it's like she's shopping for clothes, and I'm getting the advertisements. You know, that's why you got to be, I'm careful when I use the internet, because I go, well, you know, give me a presentation, I go and I show it up on the screen. Oh, let's go to this website. Well, guess what? I get the website up first to make sure there's no advertisements for women clothing on there. You know, then, you know, yeah, that happens to me, and I'm willing to admit it. So you're being data mined by everything out there is my point. And who's to say that you're not, right? Imagine this. A website records that, let's say you're getting an old person product. Like adult diapers, right? And then 20 minutes later, you get an ad, people, why don't you just end it all? I hate to tell a friend. No, but they'll dress it up. Stop being a burden to your family. Stop. No, you cannot endure that pain. And, you know, you get people who are often depressed because, hey, they're terminally ill, they're depressed. Now, oh, we're going to have, why don't you just stop the suffering? You want people like that? How about people who are not terminally ill? There's one case recently where a woman in, I believe it was the UK, had a depression, had a chronic mental illness that she couldn't resolve. So she was about late 20s, I think 27, 28. Oh, well, I want to assist in suicide because I'll never get better and I can't deal with these things. Oh, really? A 27-year-old now? What else? You had the mayor, the governor of Virginia years ago with his controversy on what he said was with a live, an abortion that went wrong, that was live, well, we're just going to let the baby die. And he said that on camera, not bullshitting you. So what's my point here? Are we actually, the beliefs that we have, are they actually our thoughts and our beliefs? Are we being data mined and manipulated? Happens in your workplace. Oh, yeah, happens in the workplace all the time. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that seatbelt in the room for an alert. Don't worry about that. Come on. You got to do cost-benefit analysis and risk. That's likely never going to happen. Well, I've seen it happen. Well, yeah, but I've never seen it happen. So it's can't, no. So if it doesn't apply to me, then I'm not. Oh, you hear this. Come on. We're safety professionals. We heard this stuff. Right? Now, here's an example of social media posts that won't die. Here we have. We'll stop it right here. So, Publio the 14th has given the United States a mysterious six-word message after old social media posts were uncovered showing critical stances on Donald Trump. What's that cryptic message? Holy Father, any message from the United States? A News Nation reporter asks, many. May God bless you all. Right? However, since he was elected Pontiff on May 8th, many have speculated about his relationship with President Donald Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance was like the last official to see Pope Francis, right? And then he died, right? The Post shared an article criticizing Vance's comments about the hierarchy of who you love in Christianity on social media under his name. There's the Christian concept that you love your family, and then you love your neighbor, and then you love your community, and then you love your fellow citizens, and then after that, you prioritize the rest of the world, right? A lot of the far left has inverted that, right? The article titled J.D. Vance's Role, Jesus Doesn't Ask Us to Rank Our Love for Others, argues that the scriptures encourage followers to love everyone equally. Right? With that, again, so I don't know what the cryptic message is here, but anyway, supposed to love God first, then love your neighbor as yourself. We know that. Well, not supposed to rank everybody. You're going to rank everybody the same. It's against human nature. But I digress. Try to love everyone equally. That's a tall order. Is it the teaching? Yes, my understanding of Christianity is that is the teaching. However, what are you going to do? No, though, that's not human nature. That's what the church is. That's not human nature. So there is such a thing as pathological altruism. I know that. That's where you love other people to the point of destroying yourself. That can be problematic. I don't know. There's always a debate. Where does the pragmatic and the spiritual, what happens there? I don't know. I know one person who does try to tackle that. That's Jay Allen in his new book here, which you got to see. I got to get him on here. Here we go. Some other safety stuff. All right. Mystery of Exploding Birds deepens in California's necropsies to suggest foul play. Good pun on words. The disturbing avian mystery is unfolding in Northern California town where residents have reported birds exploding. I mean, there was one product that I'm not going to mention the name of it that kids used to give birds in the 80s where I grew up, and it reportedly blew them up, right? Residents of a neighborhood in the Bay Area community of Richmond, Northeast, and San Francisco claim that they have found multiple dead birds in their yards and on their street. Security cameras even recorded one foul stray tail showing it falling to its death from a power line after a loud pop was captured in the footage. Right? The California Department of Fish and Wildlife Health Lab confirmed to ABC News it had received two dead birds, a mourning dove and a European starling, that injuries were consistent with trauma from a pellet gun, BB gun, or a slingshot, not electrocution. But they could not determine what the thing was. It was just that they quickly explode violently. I don't know, Phantom. Again, people who, what's the big issue here? Often people who are serial killers do that, they go after animals first. Spain probes cyber weakness at small power plants after blackout. Madrid says everything remems on the table as it seeks to identify the cause of the April 28th outage. So April 28th, massive power outage. Spain is demanding information from small electricity generators on their cyber defenses as investigators probe last month's blackout, seek to determine whether they were in a weak link exploited by bad actors. Again, think it can't happen here in the United States? You got another thing coming. Okay, so medicine. I cannot pronounce this word. Psilocybin. I've heard people say. Use has surged in the United States in 2019. Use of psilocybin, the active compound in so-called magic mushrooms, has increased significantly in the U.S. since 2019, according to a new study published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. Drawing on data from five national sources, researchers found a sharp increase in both lifetime recent use, especially among young adults with symptoms of anxiety, depression, and chronic pain. It's a naturally occurring hallucinogen found in certain species of mushrooms. Although not currently approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the psilocybin has entered clinical trials, been decriminalized or legalized in parts of Oregon, Colorado, and several municipalities. I don't know with this stuff. And we covered that story. And right. Now, this just came across the wire at a half an hour ago. Eric and Lyle Menendez will be eligible to leave prison after serving more than 30 years behind bars for the vicious 1989 shotgun slayings of their parents. The judge reduced the sentences for the killer siblings, who are now 54 and 57, from life without parole to 50 years to life with the possibility of parole. It will now be up to California State Parole Board and Democratic Governor Newsom to decide if the brothers deserve freedom after they gunned down their parents. Going on, someone, what does this mean here? Okay, so how many years have they spent in there? So it's got to be 35 years, so 50 years. So what, 2040? I don't know. Again, from life without for 50 years to life with the possibility of parole. I don't know. I don't know. What do you do after all those years in prison? Don't know. Anyway, that's all I have for tonight. And we're going to go to our political stuff in hour two of Safety Wars.